Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I am G.L. Ross, your host. Today's guest is the fascinating author, L.D. Towers. L.D., how are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. So now you're in Canada, is that correct?
I am. I'm in Victoria, B.C., which is about as far west in Canada as you can get.
Wow. And so how's the weather there today?
Pea soup fog. It's not very nice. we just last weekend had the super storm that people on the west coast might have heard about, but we didn't have it too bad, so yay us.
Well, good deal. Well, talking about that you're in Canada, but from when I was doing my research into you to prepare for this, I have to say, lady, you're fascinating. You travel the world. So tell us about some of the exciting places that you have traveled to.
Well, I spent five and a half years in the city of Berlin. I
wow.
left Canada in 2008, and then I went from Berlin. I spent some time in the south of France. Then I was in the south of Italy. Then I decided I would try out Belize, which was less successful. Then I went up to Mexico, and right now I'm having a year or a year and a half back with my family in my hometown. But the foot is getting itchy again.
Ah, I just want to, like, crawl into your backpack and go everywhere with you. I mean, that sounds like a blast. Now, what about Belize did you not like?
Belize is a really, really beautiful country. I was down in Placencia, which is in the south, and it's a really amazing little town. It's a fabulous place to visit. When I was there, I'm young, I don't have any health problems, but there was someone who died because they had what in any major normal place in North America or Europe, they had like a minor brain aneurysm, but it took them so long to get to the hospital that they died. And I was like, yeah, it was, and some things, it's just, you know, when I crossed the border into Mexico, I was like, oh, civilization. So, yeah.
Because
a lot of people would say
parts of Mexico aren't so civilized. So for you to say that, wow.
You know, it's an amazing place, Belize. When you go to the store, you have to check the dates on your food because a lot of expired food from North America and other places gets sent to Belize because it's so poor.
Wow, that is something. Well, where was your favorite place that you've been to?
I think I love Germany. I really do. I still have lots of amazing friends there. I've seen most of the country. But I have to say, Collioure in the south of France is magical. I don't think I've been to a part of France that isn't just unbelievable. It's so beautiful.
Well, I would think that France, and then as you mentioned, you were 5.5 years in Berlin, the fact that you're such a military history buff, I would think those would be great places to do research and experience.
Truly, truly it is. That's one of what took me to Germany. My specialty is 1930s German history. But, you know, anywhere you go in Germany, there's just amazing history. And in terms of World War II history, the entire area around Berlin is a battlefield. Facebook just
right.
reminded me, actually, that it wasn't too long ago I went and I saw this place where in the Battle of Berlin, in like, I think it was 3 days, 35,000 men died. And so as a military historian, it's just amazing. You know, you go there and you're like, wow, right here, like right here that happened.
Right. Yeah, my son wants to go because he's a huge military history buff. And I keep saying we're going to have to go over and see everything because he loves studying World War I and 1 and 2. So how did you get into being a military history buff?
You know, it's kind of funny. The joke is that I studied military history because I like men in boots. And there's probably some truth to that.
A woman after my own heart. There.
I love a man in uniform. Here's a shout out to all the troops everywhere. That's what all my friends say, you know, oh, I'm in it for the uniforms. And there is that. I'm more of a social historian when it comes to war, more what people went through than bullet calibers and, you know, the actual mechanical toys. But I can tell you all about the different guns if I need to. When I was working in Berlin, I was working as a military history tour guide. And I did have a couple of tour guests. I was just doing private tours. And this one poor man, he just was having a lot of trouble that L.D. Towers, the military historian, was in fact a woman. And he just kept staring at me going, "You can't be L.D. Towers." "I am." "But you're a girl." "I am." "But girls don't like war." Yeah. And his wife was sitting there, or standing there behind him, just, you know, with her hand over her eyes, like shaking her head going, oh.
Oh, my gracious. Yeah, you would never think about that, the prejudice that there may be out there, or the amazement of a woman walking that path.
It's different, you know. I sometimes say I'm like a dog that sings opera in Norwegian. I had a couple of boyfriends in Germany who were German, going, "Why do you like the war? Why do you want to study it? Why you are a girl? Girls don't like that sort of thing."
Well, now when you mentioned that you were a tour guide as a job at one of the places, what are some of the different jobs you've had as you've had your travels?
Mostly in Germany. I went over to Germany because I was offered a job in tourism because of my knowledge. And then tourism is awesome, but the big problem with Germany is that tourists come in the summer, and they come around December for the Christmas markets, which are amazing. But January through April, it's a wasteland for work. And so now, actually, I teach English.
Oh, okay.
I do, and I teach it online, so to executives.
That's interesting. So do you speak German and Russian and the different languages of places you've gone?
No. I speak German like a 2-year-old. That's the big joke. And I speak French like a 1-year-old. I had to do French in Canada as a Canadian citizen. I think I did 8 years. But when I got to France, in the time between, much of it had left. So I can understand French people often when they talk, if it's very slow. But I can't respond. It's a bit embarrassing.
I'm not good at learning languages either, so I completely understand. It amazes me people who have that gift to just pick them up and learn them in no time flat. Well, how did you change or make the transfer between military history to author? What made you decide to write?
I think I've been telling stories my whole life. Excuse me. What really got me interested, and I feel like I've written this story a lot, my sister is 5 years older. She was my hero, and I really wanted to be just like her. And so when she was, I guess, 13, 14, 15, she had to start doing creative writing in school, and I just thought that was super cool, so I started writing too. I think my first completed novel I completed when I was 16, but it was a Star Trek novel. Yeah,
okay.
It's out there, actually, but you can't publish them because unless the actual publishers of Star Trek publish it, then it's just fan fiction.
Right. Well, now, this book, your most recent, the one, The Raveners, which came out September 20th. Am I saying that correctly, The Raveners or
you
The
are.
Raveners? Okay, The Raveners. Okay, good.
You can say it either way, actually.
Oh, okay. It released on September 20th, and it has to do with vampires. So how did you decide to write a history slash dystopian thriller that tied into vampires?
The short answer is that I started writing it when I was in Italy, so 2 years ago, and I was like, look at all this money being made on vampire books. Maybe I should take a break from what I write about normally, and I should try and do a real mass market book on vampires. And as I developed my idea and started to fall in love with it, it's so not a mass market book about vampires. But it does involve a lot of military history. One of my fans wrote me and said, why is it that every single book you write is about Germans? And I was like, oh, the next one. Yeah. Well, we always sort of run home to what we're most comfortable with.
Yes.
And in fact, the main character of The Raveners is a female military historian. And
well, of course she
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you know.
Of course she is. I understand. You have to put... I'm the same way. When I write my books, there's a little bit of me in every character, especially, you know, the heroine. So, yes, I completely understand.
Yeah.
Well, what does she do that makes her so fascinating? Tell us about her.
You know, she, in the course of the book, she's sort of the victim and the catalyst. She finds out throughout the course of the book that really the life she's thought that she always had, which has been in its way good and bad, it isn't what she thought. And she finds out that really her future was always sort of settled. And in the course of the book, she decides she wants to take control of what the future is. And so she, you know, at times she's a bit maybe whiny. Why is this happening to me? What do you mean this is my life? I thought I had a life. And then by the end she realizes that, hey, you know, I do have some control. It's not all preordained, I suppose.
Well, give us a synopsis of the book.
Well, the book... The book starts out with our main character, Dr. Alexa Horn. She is heading over from England. She works for the Imperial War Museum to France to go see a trench that has been discovered. Because actually, to this day, they still discover World War I era trenches that haven't been excavated. There's actually an area of France, it's about 400 square kilometers, I don't know what that is in miles, that is a no-go zone. It's all blocked off because there's so much unexploded ordnance from World War I.
Oh, interesting.
And they still have casualties from World War I because there's a special unit of the French military, and all they do is try and get rid of this ordnance through this area to bring this part of the country back to life.
Wow. That's interesting. I had never heard of that.
It's weird to think that a war that right now we're celebrating the centenary of is still killing people.
Yeah. Oh, my gracious. And they just they definitely want that land, so they just won't leave it alone as it is rather than risk the lives?
It's a slow process. You know, I don't think in some of the areas around, say, Verdun or some parts of that whole stretch of France, it's sort of between sort of Switzerland and Amiens that they'll ever get all the ordnance out. In Belgium, it's constantly these old shells are brought out of the ground, and they just, when the farmers find them, they pick them up and they put them to the side of the road. Or if it's a certain kind, they know not to pick it up and they call in the Belgian military. But I've seen pictures of the, you know, here's the pile of shells that need to be picked up by the big truck that handles them specially. And some of them are more dangerous, and then some of them are a lot less dangerous.
How interesting. Well, I'm sorry I got off the book there, but that was interesting to me.
No.
So back on the book, how did you explain to me how Bram Stoker and Dracula are tied into this?
Well, we have this conception of the vampire myth, and the classic vampire myth is, Dracula from Bram Stoker, which is quite funny because he copied some of the ideas from that story from a doctor friend of Lord Byron's in the, I think around 1814. But the whole idea of this ancient lord who doesn't die, a lot of that, is our conception from Bram Stoker. And in some ways, especially with our main character, who is Carl von Wittelsbach, he is very similar in conception to the Stoker vampire. But in my book, all of the vampires are a group of 24 crusader knights and
right.
Actually, there are 20 knights and 4 people who were with this group. And they were sent by the church to go collect this artifact during the First Crusade. And it's an artifact from the Second Temple of Jerusalem. So when you think of Indiana Jones and the Ark of the Covenant, that was also in the Second Temple.
Okay.
And it's very powerful. So the church wanted to use it for themselves. The Jews don't want the church to have it because it's a Jewish artifact. The Crusader Knights, they get it. And the artifact, as they're around it, it changes them. They want to use it. And they have a talk within the group, and they decide that instead of giving it to the church, they want to carve out their own Crusader kingdom. And in doing that, they kill a lot of people, as happened in the Crusades. It wasn't a nice war. And they, the more they use it, the more angry both the church and the Jewish communities become. And they get together, and together as a unit, they ask God to curse these people. And God does. And in the old days, one of the biggest most horrible things you could do would be to eat human flesh. We don't look at cannibals very nicely now, but
right, exactly.
It was a real... There are, in the Bible, and I'm not a really religious person, but there's really strong laws about blood and what you can do with blood and who can touch blood.
Right.
So the curse is that they can only live by eating the body, and it can be anything that is the body or from the body.
Mm.
And Jewish curses, when you start looking into them, they're really interesting. And sort of Jewish culture is that you have done something wrong and you need to remember, you need to always know what you did wrong. So the curse is that they have to eat flesh and they have to live forever to always remember what they did.
Okay.
So you can never get away with it.
I understand that because of your history background, how you can write the stories based on the locations and the historical things that happened, but how on earth did you come up with this idea? I mean, I'm fascinated.
I guess it's the movie that plays in my head. It was interesting because this is how it got from being like a my schlock mass market novel.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean that as nastily as it sounds, but, I wanted to explain why. And, my mother always says, keep it simple. And then I'll
mm-hmm.
tell her about something and she's like, oh, you've gone away from simple.
No, yeah, this is definitely not simple.
No, but I like to know the why. I don't like to just say because it is. And in our world, especially in our mythology and our cultures, there's always a way to make the why be more than because I said so.
Sure.
And then I just start researching. So, and I have some people who help me.
Okay, I was going to say
there's a couple of people in
research?
My acknowledgments. Yeah.
Okay. Because, that's fascinating, the historical behind it, but I'm just sitting there looking at this going, how did she come up with this type of situation and predicament? Because it's like, I know for myself, I write about what I know as far as locations and things like you're doing here, but I just write romance. So to me, I just have to come up with two people who are falling in love. But this is just really deep.
It got deep.
Yeah, okay. Was that how you intended it when you started? Are you one of those people that writes out the whole outline and you have the book planned out when you do it, or are you one who sits down with an idea and just waits to see where it goes?
I'm a total pantser. I can't work with outlines. I don't create characters in advance. I truly don't know where the book is going. I just let it go where it wants to. And with this one, you know, there's normally as a writer, I say, you know, oh yeah, like when we're all in 15 and doing English lit and the teacher's going, what did the author mean when they said this? And I always used to say, not much, you know. There are some things in this book that I did actually find myself wanting to say, which is funny because it is a vampire book. You know, normally you don't think of them as having this deep message. And it's not a deep message. In some ways, I hope that people read this book and they go, I wonder if that's true, and then they get on Wikipedia. Or, I wonder if this is true. I want to go see that place.
Right.
Some of the locations in the book, actually every single location that's in that book is somewhere that I have been myself. And some of them, you know, you just have to believe them. You just have to see them to believe them. The Church of the Madeleine, for example, is in Béziers, and there is a scene, and it's kind of one of my favorites. You could take it out of the book, and the book would go on, but I think it's quite important. It's sort of a shift in thought of our main male character, Carl. But the Church of the Madeleine during the Albigensian Crusade, which is, you might have heard of the when the French got rid of the Cathars. You hear about this a lot in the Da Vinci Code. And if you've read it. And
yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, the Cathars were a breakaway Christian sect, and the king decided, and the pope, we don't really want that. And they all lived in the south of France, which is where I was living. And In military form, the papal legate and the king's advisor decided, we need to make an example of these people. So they went into the city of Béziers, and all the Cathars ran into the two cathedrals to hide. And the king's men said, well, what do we do? And the papal legate said, kill them all. God knows who are his. And so they lit the churches on fire. So in the Church of the Madeleine, probably, we think now, around 5,000 people died.
Okay. Gracious.
Yeah. And I think that just in the story of human history, you know, it's one of those places that people should go.
Right. Sure. No, absolutely. Well, now, this is the Raveners book one. Is this going to continue as a series?
It is. Because there's 24 Raveners, of the original Raveners. And then something that when I started the book, our vampire Carl had created another one. So when we find Carl, we find someone else. And that didn't really go with my curse. So I did go back to the old Bram Stoker novel idea that a vampire could create another vampire with a blood exchange.
Okay.
And so there are the Raveners, the original ones, and then they have their cursed children, the people they have shared their curse with. But whereas the Raveners can't die, and if they have one cursed child, they're quite hard to kill. If they have, say, 10 or 15, the power of the curse becomes very diluted. It's like it's shared between all 10 or 15, so they're easier to kill. So I plan to do a book for each of the Raveners, if I write 24. And what happened to them? What did they do? The next one, actually, I'm quite excited about. I was going to start it at with NaNoWriMo this year, but I don't think I'm going to.
Oh, okay. Well,
I just went back to university.
You're taking on a huge, that's a huge thing, 24. Woo! Okay. well, for the romance listeners out there, is there a romance element to the Raveners?
There is. So, not to give too much away.
Sure.
Carl von Wittelsbach was the leader of the band of the Crusaders. He was a German noble who went to fight in the Crusades, and he did this horrible thing, and he became quite evil. Even though, in general, he's kind of a neutral, fairly decent person, but mm-hmm. he does this terrible thing and goes through a period of being really evil. And then he meets the Princess of Antioch, and she has been expelled from her home, and she lives in the city of Aleppo, which is really in the news right now. I started writing this before all of current strife. And he falls in love with her. And so he decides he's going to try and be good, and he goes to the Jews and says, the Catholic Church won't rescind their curse. But he says to the Jews, please, either let me die with her or let her live forever. And they can't do that. So what they do is that every time she dies, she will come back exactly as she is. She'll be reborn, and that person will still be her. And she is Princess Alexandra of Antioch. And so Dr. Alexa Horn is, or she is Dr. Alexandra Horn, is the rebirth of this person. But she doesn't know. And the people who hunt the Raveners have been watching her, and they have never told her. So, because they had entombed Carl von Wittelsbach in this trench during World War I, because over the course of the centuries, he goes back to Germany and becomes the military advisor for the Wittelsbach family. And so in World War I, he's working for Bavaria. That's who the king of Bavaria was, a Wittelsbach. And they trap him in this trench. But they don't really know, with all the trenches, that the one that they're excavating is the one that the vampire is in. And so she goes, and conflict ensues.
Okay. Interesting.
And he loves her, but she really, the way they meet in the book the first time, I don't think I would be so in love with him either. So she has this compulsion about him, but he has to do some work.
Sure. Does he wear boots? Because, you know, if he's in boots and a uniform, that's the key to the heart, apparently.
When she finds him, he is a mummy in his uniform.
Oh.
So she sees this mummy that's moving. She's a little scared. But afterwards,
wouldn't have the same effect.
Yeah. Later on, though, he's wearing Brioni suits. And if you like suits, Google Brioni.
That changes, that would change my attention, my focus. Well, tell us some of your social media sites where our listeners can follow you and where they can buy the book. Just kind of share some of that information with us.
Sure. I am always on Facebook. I'm there a lot. I am at LD Towers Walks on Facebook. I'm at L_D_Towers on Twitter. My website is ldtowers.net, and I'm also on Goodreads, but I'm really bad about Goodreads.
I understand, me too. So now, where can they buy the book?
You can buy it on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes. It's distributed through Pronoun, so if you go to Pronoun and look up The Raveners or LD Towers, you can find it there too. It's pretty much everywhere, and you can get it in paper from Amazon as well.
Wonderful. Well, you are fascinating. Before we've only got like 15 seconds, but I have to know, where is your next destination spot? Where are you hoping to travel to?
I have a good friend in Gdynia in Poland, so it might be Poland. That's where I studied English teaching, and even though I can't understand a word of Polish, I really like the Polish people. They're awesome.
Well, safe travels, and thanks again, LD. We enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.